Hello, I am Dr. Randall Brewer, and welcome to Health Matters on Red River Radio. Many people made New Year's resolutions centered around efforts to improve health through diet and exercise. Some may be having success sticking with their plans, while others, well, maybe in need of a little bit of guidance. Tonight, we will discuss ways that actually work to improve fitness and help us to achieve the body weight or the body appearance that is appropriate for our age and biological makeup. Let's go ahead and welcome our guest tonight.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Shelley Marie Redman. I'm super excited and pumped to be here. I work as a culinary dietitian and founder of Skinny Louisiana. So my love for food will hopefully shine through this broadcast as I give you some tips to keep those New Year's resolutions coming along.
Shelley, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
Hi, I'm Libby Burkhalter, and I'm excited to be here and share some inspiration with you to get going with your exercise and health. And I am a certified personal trainer, group exercise instructor, and health coach. I've been in the fitness industry for 34 years and still find a passion to help other people get healthy and fit. So thanks for having me.
Welcome back, Libby. So we have Shelley Marie Redman and Libby Burkhalter here to answer your questions about fitness and diet here in the new year. Perhaps that New Year's resolution did center around shedding a few pounds or improving your fitness. And now that it is officially well into the year, it's Mardi Gras season. So there are plenty of king cakes around. And before you know it, there will be heart-shaped chocolates around, and after that there will be heart-shaped Easter bunnies around. I don't think it ever ends. So 1-800-552-8502 is the number that you can call to ask us a question about fitness and exercise. Or if you happen to use Twitter, which seems to be fairly popular these days, you can tweet us a question at RRR Public Radio. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer. I'm your host tonight. Shelley, let's start with you in terms of diet. There's something called an ideal body weight. So according to how old we are and maybe a certain number of other factors, is there a weight that we should all sort of strive to maintain?
You know, one of the things that I always teach in the Skinny Louisiana Kitchen is that we want to be the weight that we feel the most comfortable with. We have to come to the realization that we won't be the weight we were when we were 18 years old and homecoming queen, or 18 years old and the star football player. It really is all about comfort. And sometimes it's just being maybe 5 pounds above what we feel that ideal is, because there is such thing as, do you want to almost spend your entire day thinking about food and exercise, or do you want to spend some of your day, have that food and exercise complement your life, not complicate it, and be comfortable where you are? Now, we definitely want to have a good weight, a healthy weight, but having sometimes that IBW, that ideal body weight, that sometimes we go into these old-fashioned doctor's offices and they say, you must be 120 pounds and you're 5'4". Well, I'm not my ideal body weight, but it is such a thing as being okay with it. And I prefer to look at our body fat percentage versus that ideal body weight, because sometimes that is just so unattainable and we don't want folks to drive themselves crazy thinking about it.
All right. Well, you know, a number of people have been struggling with that concept, I believe,
right,
for a long time. And so let's go ahead as we, you and I and Libby, we were talking before the show started about potentially, you know, listening to someone who is famous in this regards, in terms of talking about what does ideal body weight really mean. There's also the concept of the sense of self and a body image that can play into our diet and fitness goals. So let's go ahead and listen to this individual. And these guys, our guests, they don't know who this is. And so we're going to play a little bit of I happen to be a little bit of a trivia person at times, so we'll go ahead and play this clip, and I think everybody out there will probably recognize who this is.
Every morning I get up and I make a list of things I have to get done. I plan my days, I plan my meals, I always have time to exercise, and I always have time to dream. The last song is a new song by Bruno Mars called Talking to the Moon. Talk to the moon. Don't wish upon a star, they're too small. Wish upon the moon. And get out what you really want to do in life. But you got to take care of yourself. You got to eat right. You got to make time to move every day. And you also have to make time to be kind to others, because that is the way you really get to heaven.
All right, so anybody want to take a shot at maybe who that was?
I think I got that one. It's Richard Simmons.
Yeah, all right.
Good old New Orleans boy.
Shelley, so does some of that ring true for what you discuss with your clients that you see in terms of an approach to diet and exercise?
You know, it really does, because there is such thing, and the phrase I love to use is we want to complement your life. We don't want to complicate it. And a lot of times, and especially in our social media culture that we live in, and even folks who are not on social media, because there are, you know, there are those far and few in between who don't even, you know, have a Facebook, which is amazing as well. We still feel that thought that sometimes we have to be what we were when we were 18 and 17. When we were 18 and 17, we didn't have as many responsibilities as we do as an adult. So we could have spent an hour and 5 hours in the gym and doing all these fancy food preps and all this amazing stuff. It really is what complements your life. And when folks realize that and come to that realization, that is when amazing things can happen. But until we come to that mindset, we struggle with, you know, kind of deciding what to do and what not to, you know, not doing it. And we find that in food a lot. And I'm sure Libby's going to expand on the exercise portion of this as well. But in food, it really is all about keeping it simple so we don't complicate our already complicated lives.
All right, so keeping it simple, Libby, in terms of exercise, you know, he talked about, you know, staying moving. And there's this book that I read many years ago, but I think about some of the points raised often. It's called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. I don't know if you know the book or not. But one of the things that, you know, people talk about is prioritizing your schedule. But one of the actual habits of people who are successful is that they schedule their priorities. And so how important is it to actually build exercise into your schedule as opposed to fitting it in?
Well, I think in life we all make time for the things that we really want to do. You know, no matter what, we're going to squeeze in what we really want to do. And it's just a matter of making your health a priority so that you schedule your exercise in, like a doctor's appointment or work or school, whatever you have going on in your life, that your health matters that much that you're willing to do 30 minutes every day to, you know, live a better life, have a higher quality of life. And so if you can learn to schedule your time appropriately, you can get it done. The most busiest people I know find time to exercise. And usually we find ourselves making excuses. I don't have time, or I got to do this with the kids, or I got this, or we're all busy people and we all have 24 hours of a day. But if you give me your schedule, I can find you 30 minutes to work out.
All right, 30 minutes a day. Is that what's currently recommended?
Well, 30 minutes. I mean, you know, if you can, I can get you to exercise 3 times a week, you know, 150 minutes for cardiovascular fitness a week. That's what ACSM or American College of Sports Medicine would recommend for cardiovascular fitness. That is a great place to start. And a little bit of movement is better than none. A lot of people like, well, I don't have time to spend an hour in the gym, so they just forget it, or they don't think 20 minutes is better than nothing. I'll take 10 minutes to start you out, 10 minutes a day, and then work you up to 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then you can change your routine, you can change your schedule a little bit so that you can incorporate the right amount of exercise to meet your fitness goals.
This is listener-supported Red River Radio, and the show tonight that you are listening to at the moment is called Health Matters, and our topic for discussion tonight is diet and fitness in the new year. You can call and ask a question, 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet a question at RRR Public Radio. We have a dietitian here with us, Shelley Marie Redmond, as well as a personal trainer, Libby Burkhalter, here ready to answer your questions. You know, Shelley, when you talk about the benefits of a healthy diet, the flip side of that is actually sedentary living as well. How much does regular activity play into whether or not we can afford an extra calorie here or there?
You know, and that's such an interesting topic to say, because what we don't want to happen is for folks to go and run 5 miles or 10 miles and then come back home and go, well, I'm gonna eat 10 candy bars because I burned all these calories and I can do this. That's not that healthy mindset to have. When we do expend calories, we can, you know, afford to maybe have something here or there, but we want to kind of get that thought out of our head. That's not why we should be exercising to eat more. And probably Libby has a lot more experience telling her clients those type of things. But I really try to change folks' approach to food. And the thing we have to remember about food, when we eat food, it has to taste good. You know, we see all these commercials all the time, and my favorite thing to see, and I'm going to pick on you know, different industries a lot, and especially industries that claim to serve healthy food. And every time I see one of those commercials, and every time I see something on Facebook, it's always gosh awful chicken and green beans. It's always chicken and green beans. And so folks come in our clinic and they see me and they go, you're going to maybe eat chicken and green beans, aren't you? And I'm like, no, we're not. We're going to add a lot of spices. We're going to add a lot of flavors to food. So that's big part of my job, is to kind of change those food patterns where we think breakfast is boring cereal and lunch is sandwich on wheat bread and then supper is chicken and green beans, to things that have flavor and things that we actually look forward to eating. Because that's the whole other part about it, as well as Libby probably tries to make folks look forward to exercising by what they want to do. So the food has to taste good. Their activity level combined with that, and that's really the road and the path to success. I wish it was something that could happen overnight with folks, but that's why we probably both work with folks for at least 6 months. You know, I wish we could lose. I wish there was an awesome plan I could put folks on where they can lose 40 pounds in a month and go to that high school reunion and really knock everybody dead, because that's usually a goal that we always have, or to really knock folks dead at that wedding that we have to go to. But it is a nice progression. And I always say it's a beautiful relationship that you start to have with your food. And that's really how we want to focus it. Not, I'm going to go run so I can eat, or I'm going to go run so I can go drink with my buddies and have a Super Bowl party. It's all about, it's so geeky to say, but it is all about that balance.
Yeah, Libby, is there really any such thing as earning those calories? You hear that?
Well, a lot of people think they can outrun the fork, but it doesn't really work that way, because sooner or later it's going to catch up with you. So having a different attitude about food, making peace with food, and Shelley gave some great examples of making her food very flavorful and tasty, so it's not like I'm sick of like green beans and chicken, but that, you know, the old moderation is key, you know, and all that. That's just kind of old school.
It's lame.
It's lame.
Very lame.
So, you know, we want to make peace with our food, make food fun, just like we make exercise fun, and changing your mentality and changing your mindset so that you're looking at your health for a lifestyle change and not just a quick fix.
All right, from the standpoint of losing weight, and both of you please weigh in on this question that's been submitted, is it, what's more healthy or realistic, to lose weight quickly versus losing weight gradually? I know you, Shelley, you mentioned, you know, give me 6 months with an individual. Is there any health-related benefits to losing weight quickly versus losing weight more gradually, like you suggest?
So what we find that happens is when folks usually start any diet program, whether it's one that they go to the hospital and purchase, whether it's one when they start seeing me, is that that first month we will lose weight fast. And that's an initial confidence builder. And that is wonderful. But after about that first month, our weight loss starts to become more gradual. So we do see that first month in almost any program, almost any dietary program, we'll see them lose that weight initially, and then we have to understand that it'll slow down. And that's key. That's a big understanding of a program. So it is okay to lose that weight, but then it goes gradual no matter what program we do.
What is a realistic weight loss goal for someone? Let's say, you know, they're in their, you know, late 30s, early 40s, or even older 50s, and they've just started to notice that they've put on those extra pounds. And we talk about the ideal body weight. We don't necessarily it's not necessarily healthy to weigh the same that we did when we were a teenager. What is a realistic goal or expectation for folks to have? 5%, 10%, 20% over an ideal body weight? Are there medical figures that would suggest that there's an ideal healthy weight?
So
for age?
That is an excellent question. So one of the things that we do in our clinic, we do track weight, we do track body fat. And we'll see what's healthy and what's kind of recommended is that folks can lose about 4 to 10 pounds a month. And then after that, it turns to about 1 to 2 pounds a week. And we always look for that 10% body weight loss after about a 6 month period. And when that happens, that's when we can start looking at a lot of the medicines that our patients and that our clients are taking. They can go back to their primary care physician, and possibly have some of those lowered. So that's always one of the goals, because we don't want to live on medicine for the rest of our life. That's no fun to wake up and have the old lady pill box and you're only 38 years old and have to take all these meds. So we look for that 10%, because that's when we can possibly start seeing some of those meds get lowered, or even us get off some of those meds.
And when you talk about getting off some of the meds, you're talking about medicines for blood pressure, medicines for diabetes, medicines for cholesterol levels,
yes,
and things like that.
Correct.
All of the medicines that people tend to get on once they get into their late 30s, 40s, and 50s, hypertension, hypercholesterolemia or hyperlipidemia, and then diabetes is a big risk.
Correct.
Libby, from your standpoint, should people have a fitness goal? Is there an ideal fitness level based on age that everyone should sort of strive to attain?
I think that's a personal goal for fitness. Depending on person's age, their limitations, if they have any physical limitations or issues that would prevent them from, say, running and they need a walking program, is very important. So you want to help a client determine their goals that are realistic and have their expectations in line with reality. So if someone says, I can't jog, I have, a foot problem, well, they shouldn't become a marathoner, So help someone, come down and sit down with you and discuss their fitness goals, whether it's, I want to improve my health, I want to have more energy, I want to feel good, I want to lose a little bit of weight, they want to get stronger, they want to improve their strength and prevention of osteoporosis. So there's a lot of different goals that people can have, and they can have multiple goals. And, I can design a program for them that will help them attain those goals. Does that help answer your question?
Sure, absolutely. And I think maybe in coordination with their physician, maybe their medical doctor, perhaps there's a level of blood sugar control they would like to maintain and maybe use exercise to facilitate that.
Exactly.
Or maintain a level of activity that they like to perform on a routine basis, maybe able to go exercise with family or friends or do things with kids and things along those lines.
Oh, yeah. We get a lot of women that, would like to be physically in better shape to keep up with their children. They realize that they had kind of gotten out of shape, quit exercising, and now their kids are running and playing. They want to be active. And so it's not just about looking a certain way. It's about feeling good in your own skin. It's about being physically able to move and feel good and keep up with your lifestyle, your kids, and enjoy life.
That was Libby Burkhalter. She is a certified personal trainer and group exercise instructor. And we are also joined by Shelley Marie Redmond, culinary dietitian and founder of Skinny Louisiana, and author of the book Skinny Louisiana in the Kitchen. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer. I'm your host tonight for Health Matters, the number four questions related to our topic tonight, which happens to be fitness, exercise, and diet. The number for your questions is 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet a question at RRR Public Radio. Shelley, there are a lot of diets out there. I think, if you turn on the TV, there's a lot of things that are advertised for dietary control. There's places where I don't know if I should actually use labels or use these product names, but let's just say you can go somewhere and pick up the food every day, and you're going to lose weight if you go there and get your food from them, versus reading one particular book. There are a lot of famous diets out there. There's, I think, maybe a Miami Beach diet. There's the Atkins diet. There's high protein diets, high fat diets. A lot of different types of strategies out there. Is there one strategy that's better than another, or are they all pretty much the same?
Here's the bottom line when it comes to quote-unquote dieting and weight loss. There's this amazing study that follows individuals who have kept 30 pounds or more off over a five-year period. So this could be folks who have lost 100 pounds. It's called the National Control Weight Registry. And what it does, again, is it just follows folks. And they found that those folks did a couple of things. And I always reiterate this to folks. They walked every day. They ate breakfast. They tracked their foods. And they kept their caloric level, or their calories, which everyone doesn't want to count. And folks are saying we walk away from calories, in about that 1,500 to 1,700 level. And that's how they kept the weight off. And that's super important for us to look at, because when we want to lose weight, we want to keep it off. And the problem with diets is that diets actually do work. We get off of them. And so we have to find that key, that magical touch that hits us, that goes, wow, I can do this for the rest of my life. And that is my job, to help folks figure out what foods do they like? What foods don't we like? What is our cooking skill? Do we work 12 hours a day? Do we have six kids? Do we have grandbabies? Do we have sports? And we fit all that in following those concepts, and they are the most successful. And that's really the magical key, that kind of turning point that folks make. We gotta track. We have to hold ourselves accountable, kind of what we heard earlier. We have to have those goals in mind, because once we lose one of those notches, it's done for us, and we do what's called fall off the wagon. But the beautiful thing is, once we realize that, we can get right back on that wagon. And that's really what we look at. After a while, after all the diets are lined up, you might see that one, like, for example, low carb. Low carb diets, you lose weight initially very quickly, and that boosts confidence. But if you look at low fat, you don't lose weight initially, but after a 6-month period of time, the weight loss with both those diets, the studies show that they're pretty even. So it's okay when folks come in and they go, oh, I just hate low carb, or I just love low carb. We work around that so it can fit with them kind of for life.
Let's go ahead and talk to Billy from Natchez, Mississippi. Billy, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is it better to have 3 meals a day, or, like, say, 6 smaller meals throughout the day?
That's a great question. Shelley, what do you think? Six small meals or 3 normal size meals?
Well, thanks for calling in, Billy. That is an excellent question, and one that I get all the time. The honest answer, that it is better to have 3 set meals and 1 snack versus the 6 meals, because we find that folks, when they do 6 meals a day, they eat more calories, they eat bigger portions, and that equals that either no weight loss or weight gain. So stick with those 3 set meals, 1 afternoon snack, and you're better off.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Billy.
All right. Bye-bye.
This is listener-supported Red River Radio, and you are listening to Health Matters. Our topic tonight, fitness and diet in the new year. The number for your calls, it's 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet at RRR Public Radio. Let's go ahead and take our next call now. We have Brian in Longview. Brian, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Oh, thank you, and I'm really interested in the topic you are discussing tonight, because I myself have struggled with my weight my entire life. Ever since I was a young boy, I was a 200-pound 10-year-old. I was 320 pounds all through high school, and I ended up tipping the scales at over 500 pounds when I was age 23. And I watched everybody around me lose weight in different ways. And the biggest problem I saw was people would say, I'm going on a diet. And when people would say, I'm going on a diet, they were saying, it's like saying, I'm going on vacation. And it's just like they were saying, the lifestyle change is the key. It took me 10 years, but I finally got myself down to 200 pounds. I went from a size 58 pants down to a size 32 pants. And I felt great. I had no surgeries. I had no weight loss diet pills. I did it all just by changing my eating habits and walking every day. And I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to give everybody a little bit of hope that, you know, your body will adjust if you just would lose the weight gradually. And, you know, it's miraculous. It's a change in your entire lifestyle that brings it about. So I just wanted to share a little bit of a positive testimonial to help people be encouraged.
Congratulations.
That
I
is
think
wonderful.
That's fabulous. And
woo-hoo!
you're an inspiration for everyone. And it's wonderful that you did it, I think, the right way, and that you changed your lifestyle. And you should be so proud of yourself for really doing the work. And there's not really a quick fix out there, or the quick fixes that are promoted are not long term. So I'm proud of you. I think that's awesome. And thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, not a problem. And thank you all for putting me on. Y'all have a wonderful night.
Yeah, Brian. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that information. Shelley, what a wonderful story.
That is amazing. That is amazing. And he did it right. I love what he said. He walked and he changed his eating habits. Exactly what everyone in that study did who has kept the weight off. They just kept it simple. And that is the beauty of this. That is amazing.
You know, Brian mentioned something that comes to mind in terms of how early in life that he began to gain weight. Is that something that you see? And is there a significant genetic component to a lot of the, you know, problems with obesity that we see?
You know, we do have genetic relations to obesity, definitely. The good news, though, is kind of like Brian just explained to us, if we work and if we put the dedication into it, we can change. So we don't want folks to think, I think a lot, you know, we are handed some pretty nasty cards sometimes. But he said it himself, there is hope. It takes work. And we're here, Libby and myself, to work and take that time. And yes, I mean, I can tell you, I probably should have been a marriage counselor too, because man, do I get tears. And, you know, it is not, I wish it was, you know, again, like the fitness shows we see on TV where we're all hugging and cutting flips and all this stuff. There are sometimes times are hard. I mean, I can tell you in our office, I've heard some disaster stories of life of some folks, but we have to get through those hurdles to do this. And so for folks who look at their family and feel like that's it, it's doomsday for me, don't. And I know that's hard to think, but don't, because the road may be a little bit harder to travel for you, but it can be traveled. And that's the nice thing.
You know, Libby, she brings up a really good point, you know, mentioning the tears. And with exercise in your clients, do you see a change? All other things being equal, let's say they're losing a little bit of weight, but do you see changes in mood? Do you see positive benefits of exercise?
Oh, definitely.
On stress levels, on mood, on coping with the normal ups and downs that, you know, life will bring you.
Sure. Physical exercise is a great stress releaser, for one. And even if you're going through a difficult time in your life, it's a great way to release stress, help you deal with the anxiety or the issues that you're going with. And when you change yourself physically, when you become physically stronger, it also changes your mindset. It makes you feel, I can take on anything. I feel better about myself. And when you feel better about yourself, you have a more positive outlook on life in general. And so exercise, I think, can to change you from the inside out.
And if you look at the, you know, psychiatric literature now, there are actually studies that are showing this. If you look at the effect of antidepressants and the effect of, you know, a regular exercise program, they're pretty close. And there are patients, we talk about patients getting off of medicines for cholesterol and medicines for diabetes.
Definitely.
But there are patients who are getting off medicines for depression as well, as a result of some of these lifestyle changes.
Oh, yes. Lots of studies show that, you know, exercise elevates your mood, helps with depression. It reduces stress, anxiety. So, you know, when those days when you really don't feel like it, but you make yourself go and do your workout anyway, you're always glad you did. You never regret the workout that you did.
Unless you're sort of in that killer spin class, right? I've heard about
you.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. I'm in trouble now.
Shelley, there's a question that was submitted. Since you're an expert of making traditional recipes lighter.
Oh, okay. This is my favorite topic.
Yeah. So do you have any advice on encouraging family members to go along with recipe changes? I guess we're going to have you put your or keep your psychology hat on here for a second. So each time this questioner is trying to change the recipe, somebody gets in there, maybe they're opening up the eggs or they're pulling out the butter and the sugar when the listener's attempts to try to lighten these recipes is taking place. So how do we manage the family when we're going to try to change grandma's recipes?
One of the things we have to remember when we modify recipes is that it does have to taste like it always did. So in other words, we can over modify a recipe, and that's a very bad thing. That's when, mommy, there was this awesome commercial about 3 years ago. It was this mom making something and the kids kind of looked at each other and said, ooh, mom's on her diet again. I think it was advertising a cereal or something. Super funny, but it made the point great. When we modify recipes, we have to do it very slowly if it's for our family and very efficiently. We cannot pull all of the sugar out of a recipe. We cannot pull all of the butter out of a recipe. And I mean, these are just basic kind of culinary school things that I learned years ago. And what we do is we do half and half substitutes first. So for example, if a product has sugar, we do half sugar and I do the basic half applesauce because it doesn't drastically change the look of the product and it doesn't drastically change the taste of a product. You know, for oils and our baked dessert goods, we'll use Greek yogurt instead and we'll do half and half. And then if they liked it, the next batch we make, we do 3/4 and 1/4 because it's a gradual, it's just like with exercise and with everything else, recipe modifications have to be very gradual. We can't do the full bowl of cauliflower rice right away because it will get thrown back at you. I'm Cajun. I'm from South Louisiana. If I bought people red beans and cauliflower rice back where I live, it would probably be thrown right back in my face. And this is my family. I know my family. We are crazy Cajuns. So we have to do it very gradually. The gradual works. The basic ones folks like to do is the sugar. Sometimes we'll do half sugar, half honey if it's in items like muffins and breads because those are very heavy and the honey weighs it down. With oils, I do stick with plainer oils. I don't do the fancy schmancy coconut oil. That's just not an oil that's culturally big here in this state. Now, some people I do it with because they enjoy the taste of it. We stick with our canolas and olives. And really, in most of your casseroles and savory dishes, we can use half of that oil and we'll be fine. We don't need to replace it with anything, which is really nice. Especially when we're sauteing our seafood, we don't need 1/4 cup. We can really use 2 teaspoons and we'll be okay. It'll cook the product just fine. So my best advice is to do half and half, and then as you cook it, gradually keep reducing. If they want a specific substitution, go ahead and keep on tweeting us because I'll be happy to answer those.
Yeah, and that comes to mind. What about you mentioned some natural sugar substitutes such as applesauce and honey.
Right.
What about some of the artificial sweeteners that are out there?
So when you're taught to cook by chefs, they are very you are not going to use artificial sweeteners in your products because it does alter and change the product. And that's why I don't use them. It's not because I'm, on a, high kite that they're bad for us and all that fun stuff. It really does change the product drastically. And the substitutions are very hard to match to get the product to taste like grandma's. Now, some folks love it. If you do use, and I don't know if we could say labels, if you do use Splenda, which, I don't cook with any of that kind of stuff. Our cookbook has none of those sweeteners in there. You have to remember, per cup of sugar, it's 1/2 cup of Splenda. And a lot of people forget that. So when they make that cookie, it tastes weird. And I go, well, did you do the substitute right? I didn't. So you have to be so careful when you use those type of sweeteners because it's not a 1-to-1 ratio. And that's confusing. And we forget. And then again, that's where we get folks going, ooh, mom made those cookies. They're nasty. Well, you have to be real careful with that. I do prefer to use the applesauce, the honeys, the zucchinis, the bananas, those items, because they are easy and they're affordable too. And that's another big thing is we can't break the budget doing this.
This is listener-supported Red River Radio. Our topic tonight on Health Matters is fitness and diet for exercise and weight goals for the new year. You can call and ask us a question at 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet a question at RRR Public Radio. Libby Burkhalter is here. She is a personal trainer and a group exercise instructor here in Shreveport, as well as Shelley Marie Redmond. She is a culinary dietitian here in Shreveport as well. Libby, you gave us a few of your talking points that I wanted to definitely cover with you tonight.
Okay.
And one thing that, you know, it's really fascinating to me is that people are keeping up with their steps, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I think you termed it wearable technology or fitness trackers.
Right.
So these have been out for a little while. Tell us about those.
Well, sure. Some of the top trends, you know, come out every year in fitness, and one of them is wearable technology. And so the, you know, pedometer's been around for a good while, but now things are kind of getting a little fancier. So we've had, you know, up bands and trackers, Fitbits and iWatches and everything, even your iPhone, you can track your steps, which makes it kind of fun to keep up with your fitness. You know, it just kind of depends on a person's personality, I think, whether they enjoy that or not. You don't want to get so attached to it that you let it ruin your day, that you didn't get your 10,000 steps in, you know, but it's a great tool to measure how you're doing. There's a lot of apps that you can track your nutrition, your fitness, your workouts. I coach online and actually use apps to work with my clients. So there's lots of different ones that are available, and it provides a fun opportunity for people to track their nutrition and their fitness, as long as they don't get too crazy with it and let it, you know, rule their whole day.
And the next point that you mentioned is body weight training. Most of us have plenty of body weight, so how can we put that to good use and train with it?
Well, for one thing, body weight training really is referring to using your own body weight for resistance. And now we have, you know, it's convenient to do a workout in 30 minutes, 20 minutes. I could use my body weight, do push-ups, sit-ups, planks, squats, lunges, all using just the weight of my body for the resistance. It's convenient, it's easy, and it's a good place to start with people that have not been doing any kind of resistance training at all, and then they can ease into a strength training program from that. So it's a great convenient way to add strength and make it's cheap. You don't have to pay for any equipment.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much equipment that's advertised out there, and if you call these numbers, I mean, you can get literally into the thousands of dollars very, very quickly. And so just the ability to use your own body weight is quite fascinating.
Well, it is. And so, you know, if you're talking about you're on a budget and you're trying to get healthy and fit, I know Shelley mentioned, you know, it's important to find nutrition that works for you, that's not going to cost you an arm and a leg, that works for a family-friendly budget. Well, exercise can be the same way. It doesn't cost anything to go walking. It's free outside. So there's no excuse not to, you know, if you don't have access to a gym, you can certainly work out without a gym membership and using your own body weight for resistance training, cardiovascular fitness. You can walk, you can run, ride a bike. So it's pretty easy to get healthy and fit without spending a lot of money.
All right, let's go ahead and take our next caller. We have Bonnie from Houghton. Bonnie, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Well, you're welcome. My question is, I like to get really hungry late at night, and I wondered if your guests have any tips about how to get over that habit.
All right. Thank you so much, Bonnie, for calling. Shelley, that midnight snack.
Yes. So, Bonnie, that is an excellent question, and a lot of us face that for a couple reasons. And one of the reasons we face it is we have to see what we were eating during the day. We may not have eaten enough during the day if we didn't get enough fiber. And fiber is the big secret in the Skinny Louisiana Kitchen. We recommend all of our clients eat 35 grams of fiber a day. Fiber keeps us full. The average American gets only between 9 to 11. So one of the things I would tell you to do, Bonnie, is for one day, 1 to 3 days, write down what you eat during the day and kind of see, did I skip something? Did I maybe not do a vegetable at my lunchtime? But for folks who get hungry at night for a snack, I do recommend two things. I'm not sure what our rules are on talking about products on the air, but I do tell folks, look for items that are about under 100 calories, and I always look for cold. And the reason I go for cold at night, think of something in the freezer section, is because cold takes a long time to eat. So it's not something like we're popping in, you know, candies, etc. Cold is also very soothing. And the average popsicle, there's some out there. I'm going to challenge you, because I don't think we can say labels on air, to look for one that's 25 calories. It's in the freezer section. It comes in a box of three. That can be your snack, and they have no artificial flavors or colors in them. So that's another little kind of hint for you, but it's soothing, and cold takes a long time to eat. So first things first, just to kind of recap, jot down what you eat for 3 days, make sure it's enough. And then if you still are just like, I need a little snack, I need something a little sweet, look for those under 25 calorie popsicles in that freezer section, because cold takes a long time to eat.
Ooh, well, thank you very much. I'm going to try that.
You're so kind, Bonnie. You have a good one.
Hey, Bonnie, call us back and let us know how it goes.
Okay, I will do it.
All right, thank you so much for calling us tonight. Libby, you know, Shelley mentions journaling about, you know, what people eat during the day. Should people journal their activity as well? Let's say, you know, they don't have a fitness tracker of any sort. Should they journal maybe how often they exercise, what they do in terms of their exercise program?
It really depends on their goals, for one thing. I think it's helpful if someone is following a strength training protocol, then knowing how many repetitions they're doing, how much weight they're doing, that's important to log so that they can make progress. And if they're working with a trainer, the trainer can help them with that. But also it's a fun way to see how strong they're getting or how much better they're improving with their fitness. So those type of things to log are great. And there's so many apps, and you can use pen and paper, or you can use a fun app on your phone. There's lots of ways to measure that. So I think it's a good idea to log your workout information. You can put it in your calendar, just like you do with your scheduling your workout.
I mean, in terms of balancing, the calorie checkbook, if you will, I mean, Shelley, do you ever recommend, patients who are actually counting their calories that they're taking in, that they also count the calories that they are spending in terms of, calculating your basal metabolic rate, your weight, determines, how much energy you need to do nothing, right? That's our basal metabolic rate.
Right.
And then, how much activity you do outside of exercise, and then adding your exercise to that. Do you ever recommend that patients or clients use a balance sheet, if you will?
So we do track in our clinic, and what I track is fiber, because we do push fiber. And the reason I push fiber is because that helps me make sure folks are getting grains, fruits, and vegetables. And we want that 35 grams. And then when we eat that much fiber, it's almost an automatic that our calories are going to be in that 1250 to 1500 range. Because remember, I always tell folks I run a very specific weight loss clinic. That is our goal. People come see me for weight loss. And so it is a tracking form that we use, and I actually don't have them balance in their exercise because the numbers can be off. And some folks may reward themselves a little bit more than what they did. So I really just focus on food, and I let the fabulous folks like Miss Libby over here focus on their exercise calories so that they can build on that, because I don't want to mess up that number for them. I'd rather the expert over here, as in Miss Libby, kind of come up with that great number. And just to kind of bank on that, I actually do track my exercise. For the folks out there, I love food. Exercise is not my jam. I know I work in a PT clinic, and folks probably think I'm this big runner and all this stuff. I am not. I am a klutz. So I have to completely write it down so I know exactly what I'm doing. It helps me. So I tell that to folks, and that kind of makes them feel a little bit better, because I just exercise in me. I like it. I can do it, but I need to follow that plan because I don't know what I'm doing. It's embarrassing to look, I don't go to a gym because I'm too embarrassed because I don't know what I'm doing. So it is okay, and I think that kind of relaxes folks. It makes them feel a little bit better to know that I write this down too. I have to follow this as well.
I have someone who actually just tweeted in a question asking, is it okay to substitute dietary fiber with fiber such as with Metamucil and other sort of medical fiber product? Is that, does that count?
It does not. I broke a heart. You can take those. They are absolutely safe to take. But again, we're looking at the food and we count the fiber in our food. So that is a wonderful question. And I love that they can take a fiber supplement, but we want 35 grams from that food. So that is an awesome clarification. So thank you for tweeting that in.
Yeah. And another one that just came in, this person likes fried fish.
Okay. So
here in Louisiana. And so let's look at this meal. Okay. Let's plan this meal together for this individual.
Okay.
They're wanting to have fried catfish.
Mm,
and
yummy.
Normally they have that with French fries.
Oh.
And coleslaw.
Got it.
And tartar sauce.
Uh-huh.
And some cocktail sauce with sweet tea.
They're going to have to come see me after
there you
that.
Go. There you go. So we already have them seeing Miss Libby, but here's the deal. So I'm going to break it down from top to bottom. And this is a skinny Louisiana in the kitchen must have. So instead of cornmeal and instead of breadcrumbs, the way I batter any type of meat is I take fiber one. They're probably going to cut that out, but a high fiber cereal, and I crush it. I mean, we pulverize it. I actually get my kids to get it in a rolling pin and roll it in a bag. And then I mix a little Parmesan cheese with it. So that's our breading for our fish. We almost do what's called blacken it. And so I don't fry it. We follow that blacken technique. So I hope they have a pen and a paper. So we take about a tablespoon of oil, we put it in our pan, and we cook that fish. Now you have to stand by and do it because it will burn. And then you flip it over once and you kind of take the oil in that pan and you keep pouring it over there. That is exactly what blackening is. And that's what Chef Paul Prudhon made famous in the New Orleans and in his K-Paul kitchens. Your French fries, we can do a various different fries from your sweet potato. Some folks do jicama. Some folks do beet. Some folks do zucchini. Some folks do eggplant. I like eggplant just because it is a kind of more of a southern staple. We slice it real thin. I do a little bit of an egg white kind of wash on it, and we put it in the oven for about 30 to 40 minutes to make it really crispy. The coleslaw, we cut up our cabbage. We mix Italian dressing with it. And hear me out, a little feta cheese, and that's what creams it instead of the heavy sugars that folks will use. And then finally, what to dip that fish in. I do use a little bit of tartar sauce. I think it's okay to, you know, have those little condiments, cocktail sauce, but I do make my own sauce, which is in the Skinny Louisiana in the Kitchen cookbook. It's our Romalade sauce.
Well, since you're on the topic, why don't you go ahead and let us know about how folks can get this cookbook soon.
So this is a 2-year process, and it is a labor of love. It is the you know, probably the best professional thing I've ever produced or made, and it's called Skinny Louisiana in the Kitchen. The awesome folks at Pelican Publishing, based out of Gretna, Louisiana, decided to pick up the book and publish it. It contains 84 mouth-watering Louisiana-based recipes. So it is a very Cajun-based cookbook. It uses a lot of our seafoods, a lot of our sweet potatoes, the foods that make Louisiana famous. So you're not going to find chicken and green beans in this cookbook. It also has our shopping guide, as well as how we do recipe modifications, kind of that secret that I just gave of how we bread fish and how do we blacken a product instead of frying it. What's the difference between frying and sauteing? So that chapter is in there. The book will be released on Mardi Gras Day. So we're throwing you something, mister. That's February the 28th. Folks can go to our website, which is skinnylouisiana.com, to pre-order the cookbook, or they can come to our fantastic book release party, which will be at Eberhardt Physical Therapy at 12 noon. You'll get to taste our muffaletta dip, our red beans, our Mardi Gras slaw, and our king cake. And yes, they are all skinnied, and they are awesome.
And you're going to be there to sign copies of the book.
I will be there to sign copies of the book.
Excellent. Libby, from your standpoint, let's talk a little bit more about what's very popular in the exercise world right now, HIIT, high intensity interval training. What is HIIT all about?
Well, HIIT is come down the pike, and it's effective. It works. It's short burst of anaerobic and aerobic exercise intervals. So you're alternating hard and easy. So it's very time efficient in that in a 30-minute time slot, I could do a HIIT training workout and burn more calories and actually rev up my metabolism for the rest of the day, as opposed to doing a steady state cardio workout. So that's why it's very popular and it's very effective. And the thing is, a lot of people would think, oh my gosh, that's too hard for me if you're starting out for exercise. So the nice thing about HIIT training is we can regress that workout to make it manageable. So you may start off, for example, on the treadmill and do a HIIT workout, and it may be alternating walking at different speeds, or maybe going up on the incline and then bringing it down flat. So it can be very conducive to the client that needs the certain type of workout. We'll just make it fit their fitness needs.
It sounds like, a fitness program for ADD, really. I mean, it's got, this changing, changing atmosphere. You get to do one thing for a very short amount of time, and then by the time you're bored,
right,
your personal trainer is moving you over to something else, right?
It gives you a lot of variety. In fact, that's what I taught this morning, was a HIIT training class, and we alternate intervals of cardiovascular fitness and strength training. So, and you can do it at different intervals. You might have 20 seconds hard all-out effort and then a 10-second recovery. That's one. We might do it for different lengths of time. It might be 1 minute on, 30 seconds doing the strength training and 1 minute doing cardiovascular, or the reverse of that. So there's lots of options for the class or the workout to change the different modes of exercise and make it a HIIT training class. It's very fun.
And so it's really more of a concept. It's not like you're going to go and you're going to get the same thing every time. It's a conceptual
way
of exercise.
Right. You can, yes. As a trainer, I change it up all the time. I think it's more fun. Variety is the spice of life. And clients don't get bored, and it's fast paced, and by gosh, you're done with your workout, you feel great, and you're ready to go on with your day.
Excellent. How often do your clients use HIIT training? Is this something that they can do every day, or is this something that should only be done, a certain number of times per week?
That's a great question. No, really, HIIT training just two, maybe three times a week at the most. So you want, when you're planning your workouts, you want some hard days, you want some easy days. So it gives your body a chance to recover so that you're able to do that next exercise bout efficiently and feel good and not be so fatigued. So high level athletes use it, for training also. And so their level of training is a little bit different than our average person that's just trying to get healthy and fit. But, a couple times a week, I would recommend.
And a question that was sent in regarding exercise was, the person just wants to feel better and get healthier. They're asking if they should go into an aerobic program or should they lift weights.
Well,
so when someone's just getting started, how do you approach that question? Is it individual?
Yes, it would be an individual person, and knowing their health history would help me decide exactly what would be the best for them. But if they had not been exercising at all, they were really sedentary, I would encourage them to do a walking program to start with to increase their cardiovascular fitness. And then I would add in to that some strength training, a couple times a week. So, but to just start with walking, it's easy. Just get you on a walking program is the best thing to do. And then you can add some strength training, flexibility, things like that.
And if someone is having difficulty, let's say they start an exercise program and, they have pain as a result, or they're having trouble getting started, how would they find a personal trainer or someone to help them with getting started? Or is there a role for maybe seeing a health professional to see maybe there are some medical issues that need to be looked at before they start an exercise program?
Sure. Well, anyone starting a new exercise program should check with their doctor and get their doctor's okay. And so that way, if they're on certain medications, a beta blocker or anything, that'll affect their heart rate while they're exercising. And if they're working with a fitness professional, that fitness professional would need to know that information to help them design the right program for them. But it's always good to go and get a checkup with your doctor, say, I'm interested in trying to get started on an exercise program. And then there's a lot of qualified professionals, wellness centers that are available that they could, connect with and have an exercise program designed for their needs.
And in terms of, the more complicated situations, I know, a lot of patients who are seeking personal trainers or going to exercise classes, going to gyms, are relatively healthy, but there are a lot of people out there who are listening who may have had a joint replacement and they still have pain, or they may have, you know, some medical conditions, or maybe their obesity hasn't been adequately addressed yet. Mm-hmm. How do they, are they people who, you know, let's say the doctor says, go ahead and try some exercise. Are there individual programs out there that can tailor to the needs of people with certain medical conditions?
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, I work with a lot of special need patients, Parkinson's, knee replacements, things that people have that they maybe cannot go to a regular group exercise class, and they may need a specific class designed to help people with arthritis, water aerobics. They have certain classes at different facilities I know in town that address those type of issues, that they can get special help with their type of issue. So if they're having a health issue, they want to get the right training.
So, you know, outside of, you know, really severe medical problems, there aren't a lot of medical contraindications in terms of exercise. It's something that everyone can do, as long as it's tailored to the needs of the individual.
You know, a lot of times I'll have a client, they have an injury or something, and a lot of times people will just like, well, I can't exercise because my knee hurts. And I'm like, well, what about the rest of your body?
Yes.
I can think of a lot of exercises I could do with you that we can leave the knee out of the equation. So if you have an injury or you're dealing with, you know, a problem physically, you need to get with a qualified professional to help you come up with a plan that will help you, because becoming sedentary will only complicate your health and make your situation worse. So there's lots of things that you can do and modify programs to fit needs, and maybe find something you didn't even know you liked doing as a result of an injury. As an athlete, I grew up as an athlete, competitive athlete, and I had my share of injuries. And I'll tell you, you can always find something else that you can do.
Very good information. Shelley, in the last minute or so that we have, addressed two points that I wanted to bring up. One was that of healthy snacking.
Okay.
And the other point would be healthful use of alcohol. Does such exist? And if you recommend alcohol in moderation in moderation with your clients.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
it is Mardi Gras, so.
So real quick, healthy snacking. We don't want to oversnack. Oversnacking is very common. It's called grazing. And when we do that, we eat too much. And it is so, so common. And it's one of the habits we break. If you focus your snack on a protein and a fiber, that is going to keep you full. We want to walk away from just picking up crackers. We want to walk away from that protein fiber, apple peanut butter, apple cheese. Real quick, alcohol. Alcohol in moderation is fine. The American Heart Association says we're going to have a glass a day, so bring us our 4 ounces of wine, 4 ounces of champagne, or our light beers.
And
one glass.
And red wine is relatively healthier, I understand.
Yes, so we find that the darker the wine, the more antioxidants that are in there, but please don't think you have to drink that if you love your Pinot Grigio. So the antioxidants are higher. But again, you can do your Pinot Grigio and be okay.
So one drink a day for women,
American
two for
Heart
men.
Association says we can do that. And that is only about 80 to 100 calories. So I would rather that than a piece of cake.
Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or a health professional. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance tonight by Wally Derleth, Tim Snell, and Henry Edwards. Support for this program tonight came from the Noel Foundation as well as the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Please join us again next week for Health Matters on Thursday night. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and thank you so much for listening this evening.